All right, folks, welcome to ninoscorner.tv. I'm with John Pounders, one of my favorite co-hosts or hosts, however you want to say it, who's co-hosting, who's hosting here. Man, we're going to be talking about the lineage of the Fallen, and this is we're going to go in-depth on this, and this is pretty, pretty interesting because John is a real wealth of knowledge on this subject, and he has videos that have gone just viral over this stuff. John, man, first of all, thank you for joining me.
Hey, man, thank you for having me again. I was going to tell you, too, I wanted to shout out one of your listeners. I met her in Florida, and she says she watches, like, every single show that you do. And her name's Gigi to me. That's what her grandkids were calling her, Gigi. But she was like, loving it, and she saw me on there. It was really cool. So
what's up, Gigi?
Yeah. She's a big, I guess, just like I said, man, she couldn't say enough good things about you. So it was really cool, but I'm glad to be back on, man. It's been a little bit. And this subject right here, I think, is really more important than what a lot of people might even guess it is.
Yeah. Because the more I'm researching this, the more I'm diving deep into these interviews and guests. And the more I do this, man, I can only come up with one answer, and that's God and Jesus Christ. And we are in a spiritual war, and I'm sorry, I used to be the guy, you know. I guess I could have considered myself a liberal back in the day, you know, if I really think about it. You know, my awakening process happened around 2003, 2004, after 9/11, and it just really grew. But I fell into the trap of the extraterrestrials and the alien agenda, and now I've come right out of it, and I'm saying, hold up, folks. Yeah. There's a lot more to this story. So stay tuned, yeah, folks. I'm just going to read this off real quick. Get your morning kick. Morning kick with Chuck Norris. ChuckDefense.com/Nino. Have you ever wondered what happened to the legendary Chuck Norris? I recently saw a video he made and I was shocked. He's in his 80s and still kicking butt and working out and staying active. What's even more shocking is he's stronger, can work out longer, and even has plenty of energy left over for his kids, folks. He did this by just making one change. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife even started doing this one thing, too, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger, her body looks leaner, and she's got energy all day. You know what that means. All right. Chuck made a special video that explains everything. Make sure you watch it by going to ChuckDefense.com/Nino or by clicking in the link below this video. It will change the way you think about your health. Once again, that's ChuckDefense.com/Nino, and click on the link in the description box below to watch the video. It's worth it. You won't believe how simple it is. And by the way, just a reminder, Chuck Norris is 81 years old and yet has more energy than me. I'm supposed to say that. But he discovered he could create dramatic changes to his health simply by focusing on three things that sabotage your body as we age. Watch the method by clicking on the link below, folks. Get started. And Chuck Defense. Wah! All right, John, this is a big topic to me because I have no doubt now, and I think people can see it plain as day, especially my Christian audience, and for people that are just catching up or newly entering this realm, this waking up process, and understanding this really is a spiritual war. Welcome. We welcome you with open arms, and I'm telling you, I got the guy here, John Pounders. Where do you want to start with this, John?
Well, so I guess we need to start at the very genesis, the beginning of mankind, to really understand what's going on and what's at play. And I've been studying this stuff. I've been obsessed with it since about 2010, and I've been dedicating pretty much myself and a lot of my programs, who I interview, to comparative religious studies so that I can see the comparisons with all of the different religions, which I would consider ancient histories. This was the way that they told their story, and to be able to see them, how they all weave together and tell a same story, maybe from a different perspective. Maybe this person believes something a little bit differently, but they see it from that perspective, maybe a different language since the languages were split up, but all of them have this common story that takes place. And how I got kicked off on it was when I was started reading the Bible, when I actually became a believer. Before I was a believer, I was into mythologies and into all those different things. I was also into drugs. I was into a lot of things, and I ended up repenting of all of that because I realized that all of the kind of the mistakes I made in my life were had gotten me to the point where I was at, and it wasn't a good place. And so I started reading the Bible. I thought, you know, I'd studied the Bible because I had to in school my whole life, because I went to a Christian school. And so I actually wanted to read it, right? Because before I read it, and none of it really made sense to me, I could care less about what it said. And I got to Genesis 6, so just six chapters in, where it talks about the sons of God coming down to the daughters of men and having children with them. And they were called Nephilim. They were called giants. They were men of old, men of renown. So these heroes that were of old, some of the translations say heroes of old. And so that got my interest immediately, because with my background and also studying the Bible and mythologies, I was instantly seeing that the Bible was actually telling the same story. Up to that point, I hadn't really deciphered that, because I don't think I remember ever a sermon, anything about giants or anything about the sons of God coming to the daughters of men and making children. I never heard anything about that in all my years of going to church and going to school. And so immediately I became obsessed with that. And so that's kind of gotten my studies along the way. So starting at the beginning, to kind of give us a full grasp of what is going on within the Bible, but also within ancient texts like the Enuma-Elish and all of these other emerald tablets, some of the oldest stuff you can find on religion. And the story is that a god created the heavens and earth. There are gods in some of the mythologies. Gods created the world, heavens and earth. They created their own humans. In the Bible, the word is Elohim, which is a plural.
But the Bible, isn't it plural?
It's a plural word. Elohim is plural. And interestingly enough, the Bible speaks of these entities that were supposed to be the ones who were watching out for mankind, kind of watchers. That's why they were called the watchers in the Book of Enoch. And I believe that there was a special group of man created by the All Creator, which the one who is over everything. Okay, the Most High God is what it refers
capital,
to him.
The capital G God.
The capital G God created Adam and Eve within a structure, and gave them eternal life, gave them all of these things, but then they messed up and they were taken out of this environment and put in an environment where I believe there were other people. Otherwise, Cain would not have been everywhere that he ran had there not been other people outside of the Garden of Eden. And so I believe that
what makes you say that?
Well, in the Bible, in Genesis, it says that God created the heavens and earth, and then it goes on and it says he created man. And then there's another story told that God creates Adam, and then he makes Eve out of the rib of Adam because he doesn't want him to be alone. But in the other part of the scripture before that, it says that God created man and woman. And so, like, to me, this could be the exact same story, just told more in detail after that. But to me, it looks like it's two different accounts of different types of people. And in my mind, the way I see through mythologies and even in the Bible, you have groups of types of humans that are way different. You have dwarves, you have all of these different types of creatures that you see
that we thought never existed. And from what I'm seeing on a lot of YouTube videos, from what I'm seeing, they could be CGI or whatever, but what I'm seeing in some of these national park cameras and stuff like that, these things exist. I mean, it seems to me they've always been here, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all of the artifacts that we found, all of these different things, they all kind of tell a similar story of this happening. I mean, just any kind of Greek mythology, any kind of religion, they all have this story. And so the existence of this isn't, it really has only been covered up in the last 100 years or so by the Smithsonian. They've been taking giant bones and different things that they have, and they've been putting them away for people to not be able to take them. There's clear documentation of these giant bones being found all throughout American history. There's a book, I believe, by Fritz Springmeier that talks about he shows all of the different articles and even quotes from Abraham Lincoln talking about the giants in the land and all of these different quotes about this being over here in America. So it wasn't until the agenda of humanists, the humanist agenda, until
the push evolution.
Yes, the push evolution, because you have to cover this up and be able to push evolution.
You know, I'm looking here, and I'm going to pull something up for everybody. This is claims that the Smithsonian destroyed bones or whatever. There was articles, the people can go and research themselves. There was articles on this that said that, man, I hate these commercials, that said that there was articles back in the 1800s and 1900s, early 1900s of them finding giant bones and excavating these sites for giant bones. And these bones were enormous. There are even pictures, right, John?
Yeah, there are pictures. There's, I mean, so they're obviously, it's hard to tell what's real and what's not anymore, because, but there's pictures that go back before all the AI editing, before all of that, that people can go to. Like I said, these newspaper clippings of different things that you can see, that people thankfully have documented and kept. And it's pretty amazing. I've known people personally.
There's no way you can Photoshop an 1800s photograph. There's even a photograph that I came across that, have you ever seen this? The Thunderbird that was killed by a bunch of 1800 Western pioneers, whatever. It was a pterodactyl.
Yeah.
They killed a friggin' pterodactyl. There's a photo of this. Go look at it. You can't Photoshop that in the 1800s. But it says here, claims that the Smithsonian Institute admitted destroying thousands of giant skeletons in the early 1900s originated on a website that identifies its content as satirical or fictional. Although the claim has been debunked, they always got to put that in there, don't they? Since 2014, some social media users have recently been duped into thinking the report is factual. So they're saying, no, you've been duped. All that stuff you're conjuring up on the internet is all false.
Yeah, well,
they're doing their best to hide this even now, huh?
I think that it's pretty unfortunate that they say that. I mean, I've interviewed probably a dozen archaeologists that have actually had this happen to them, to where their site has been taken over. Boom, they've taken it. So it's common knowledge that this happens. For them to deny it really just fools the people who are asleep and not paying attention. But you know, when you look at, like, you were talking about this picture of the Thunderbird, that picture has been around for a long time. I remember seeing that picture when I was in grade school. They would show it in our science books, because I went to a Christian school. So they would actually show a lot of this stuff in there, and they would show this beast that these Japanese fishermen, I believe, pulled out of the water that looked like the Loch Ness Monster. So they had these different things in our science books that showed us, but in a public school system, you're definitely not going to get that. And I think that, to me, it's apparent that the people that are in charge of the world, they understand these things and they're using them to their advantage to rule. And, you know, going back to that, the flood took place not too long after this. And there's this,
just gonna the picture here. Is this the one you're talking about?
Let me see here. Got to pull up the screen again.
There's quite a few pictures out here, but
yeah, that Thunderbird, the one on the far left there, that one I've seen since I was, like I said, since it was in grade school. So, like, before Photoshop was around, I remember we had little dark rooms that we had to develop film on in school back then. So, I mean, like, there was probably, maybe Photoshop was around, but nobody really used it. But that picture has been around for a while.
You know, my high school, we were the Coronado Thunderbirds, and I always asked, what's a Thunderbird? And now I know.
Here it is. Man, when you talk about the Thunderbird, it goes back to this story, is super interesting. If we take it post flood. So in the Bible, you have God is angry. The Most High God is angry with these sons of God, these Elohim, who have done something that he told them not to do. They defiled themselves with women, and they've taken and had children, these monsters that were going around terrorizing and teaching the children of men magic, and teaching them things that they weren't supposed to teach them, like the seven sacred sciences. They taught them all of these things. They taught them to write. They taught them things that we would consider great, really, nowadays, because they learned how to do mathematics. They learned how to all these things, but they also learned secrets that they weren't supposed to learn, and they worshiped them as gods. And so God was angry. He sends a flood, and everybody knows the story. He saves Noah and his family, and that's pretty much documented in every book as well. Noah has different names and different books, but this race of man who made it through the flood is documented. And then you have civilization builders that continue after this. And Enoch, but there's two Enochs. So let me get this clear real quick. There's an Enoch that came from the seventh from Adam that was Noah's great-grandfather or grandfather. And then on the other side, on Cain's lineage, you have an Enoch as well. And it says in the Bible that Enoch was a city builder. So he would go around building cities, and some of the remnants of his cities still exist to this day in the name, like Tenochtitlan, where you have the word Enoch in there. And all of these cities have something in common. They're pyramids. And a lot of, that's why a lot of people theorize that Enoch actually built these pyramids. And throughout all stories, and not including the Bible actually has one group that kind of God decides, this is the group that I'm going to show myself through, and this is the group that I'm going to put my word in, and this is the group that my through the Messiah is going to be born through. And we have to understand that there are two Messiahs. There's not just one Messiah. There's two lineages. And these lineages date back to pre-flood. And at post-flood, you see in the Bible.
Jesus Christ, the second Messiah has not come yet, right?
So this is the way I look at it, and this is the way I think that the Bible declares it, and also a lot of these other religions have this. So you have this lineage, and I'm just going to go a little bit back and tell a story real quick, because I think the story will kind of help people understand what I'm talking about here. So if you go back to the Enumelish, and the Bible tells us about this story, this divide between good and evil, Baal and Yahweh, right? There's this Baal and Yahweh battle going on in the Bible. Well, the Enumelish talks about this battle as well, but they go by the names Enki and Enlil. And Enki and Enlil are Elohim, Anunnaki, which Anunnaki means sons of Anu. Anu was the great god over everything. And these two were... one was Enlil, which means LL, which is God's name repeated, like when you see El Shaddai in the Bible, and the other one was Enki. And this is biblically, this Enki would be described as what we know as Baal, as what we know as Hercules, as who we know as in Marduk in the Babylonian religions, this God king who sets himself up above the council of gods and decides he is going to be the one who takes over as he destroys the people of Enlil. And you see this shift happening, because post-flood, you have Noah and his family kind of reigning over everything. And then all of a sudden, you have the introduction of these giants again. You have Og of Bashan, and he was known as the Rephaim king, which Rephaim were another term for giants, but it literally means the dead. He was the king of the dead. And it says that his bedstead was like, I don't remember how long, I want to say like 9 feet or whatever long. And he was a giant. And there was other giants mentioned. There was giants mentioned who had 6 fingers and 6 toes, 2 rows of teeth. Giants mentioned who were tall as cedar trees.
Which we have heard that the Kandahar giant possessed the same 6 fingers, 6 toes, and 2 rows of teeth, correct?
Wow, yeah. Yeah.
L.A. Marzulli talked about that, yeah.
Yeah, and so you have Og, who in the Bible it says he had 60 walled cities, and these were what we would consider Aryan cities, like the Aryan civilization, which is why there's a lot of obsession with factions that are in high levels with the Aryans and their domination, because they believe this is where they came from. So you have these two groups, and then around the time of Nimrod, which Nirim Sin maybe, or some people call Marduk, depending on the text, and then but he decides to basically bring the whole world under his subjugation. He takes over the entire world, and the Bible describes him as building a tower that it goes up to the heavens. Other texts describe it almost as a portal, like he was trying to have a portal into heaven so that he could storm the throne room. In the book of Jasher, there were people that wanted to storm the throne room of God, Most High God, in revenge for what happened to their siblings on the other side of the flood. So you have this epic battle that they're trying to take place, and then God sees it and he's like, no, we're going to do something just a little bit different here. How about this? Boom, we're going to split the languages and we're going to divide the earth. It says in the Bible, in the days of Peleg was the earth divided. So this is where you get this Hyperborean kind of idea. And so the only way to kind of trace these bloodlines is through their religious practices. And you see that the religious practices of these people, I did a show about the shamanism and Gilgamesh, the dwarf pygmy king. And he was the, interestingly enough, he was the father of Gilgamesh. And his name was Lugalbande. He was the dwarf king. And he was a, there's an epic called Epic of Lugalbande. And this is where most of the religious practices of these people start with the, can I share my screen here? I think
yeah,
I can.
Go, absolutely.
To do that. I want to show you guys something here. Let's see. Maybe not that one. This one right here. So you see this common story here and of the feathered serpent religion and going back to this. And so they all have this common story. And this story, I'll just tell the story of Lugalbande, just a truncated version to kind of get people understanding. He was known as a mighty king. He was a dwarf king, but dwarfs back then weren't considered kind of what we consider dwarves. They were super strong. According to all of the epics, they could pick up boulders and smash giants with them. They were really, really quick, and they didn't tire very easily. And this dwarf king was, they were on a mission and he fell sick and his friends
sounds like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. It's basically the story of Lord of the Rings, but the actual original version of what is taking place here. There, all these stories all tie into this, but he finds this cave to go and maybe die in and, you know, just hope that he survives. He enters into this cave, and as he's there, there's this little plant and this drink, and he takes these things, and all of a sudden he's transported in this journey up this cosmic tree. And can you guys see my screen?
I wonder if that
here?
Could have been ayahuasca.
Well, there's a lot of people that say that could be that. There could be mushrooms. Like one of the stories is there's this serpent that looks like that has big giant white breasts that you would eat of her breasts and then you would ascend the cosmic tree. And that sounds like mushrooms, but also ayahuasca. He drank something and he had this experience. And of course, in shamanism, this is ancient practice of being able to attain the spiritual realm. So if you guys can see my screen here, can you see my screen?
Yeah, the world tree.
Okay, so this cosmic tree here, it's always pictured as going through the earth, and at the bottom you have the roots, and at the roots there are these serpents that are at these roots of this cosmic tree, and this tree goes up all the way to the very tops of the firmament, to the tops of heaven, and in this tree you have this thunderbird, what we would call a thunderbird, but they called it the Anzu bird, or the feathered serpent that was at the top of this tree. And so Lugalbande starts taking this journey. He's climbing this tree. He goes all the way up to the top, and he gets there and he sees this baby Anzu bird laying there in this nest. And so he basically makes the nest into a temple. And when the mother Anzu bird returns, she grants him any wish that he wants. And this Anzu bird, it's interesting how it's depicted, because in some ways it's depicted with a lion face, and it reminds you of the cherub in the Bible. Like there's this cherub that's supposed to guard over things, and it goes south and it decides that it's going to grant this wish to this dwarf king. And he asks for unlimited speed, so if he could point and he could see a direction, he could be there instantly. He could never tire, and he could fight wars, because they had hordes of armies invading. And so he was their last defense.
Basically transport.
So I don't know how he did it, but he would look at an area. So let's say you look at an area far off the field, and then within the snap of the fingers, you're there if you wanted to be there. That's how quick, like Flash Gordon type stuff here. And so he comes back to Earth and he makes a promise to this Anzu bird that he's going to put the worship of the Anzu bird all through the temples in the area. And so this is why you see a lot of these depictions that you can see here. You see this bird, this Anzu bird, and even in Native American cultures, you have the feathered serpent. And notice here on this picture on the bottom left here, you have this headdress kind of thing, looks like a wig. It's very similar to the wigs that some of the founding fathers wore when they started the civilization. And
very true.
Yeah. And then so the feathered serpent, you know, in every story you have these seven, what they're calling, this is what most people who study comparative religions call them, but the seven sages. of Atlantis, who basically after the flood went to the most remote parts of the world where you would have people that are like Native Americans here or just tribes that are just so remote, and they would teach them different things and they would build civilizations and they would teach them, you know, a very primitive organization or primitive group of people. They would teach them how to mine, how to learn, how to read, how to write their language, and how to do all of these different things. And all of the stories, interestingly, like Native American legends, they all tell this story to be exact. And in some of the stories, in the mountains, you have this guy, he looks human, but he could also take the form of a serpent, but he's got a staff in hand, standing, you know, there in the Andes mountains, greeting these different people. And there's legends of this, even in our parts of the United States out there where you're at, where I'm at in Indiana, Ohio River Valley, all there's mound builders. I just went to Cahokia Indian Mounds and they just found some relics there, these ancient drills and stuff. That was, I literally just saw that article before we started our show, but these things were all over the place and they credit it to these entities. And a lot of people don't understand maybe how the giants survived the flood. But I think when you hear the stories, it makes sense that these entities were sea-dwelling type entities. And because they would always say they would come out of the water like a serpent, and they were known as the priests of the serpent. So it's really interesting when you got to kind of get into
about Grand Canyon. There's a lot of parts of the Grand Canyon that are completely off limits. And if you go there, you'll see Black Hawk helicopters or, you know, or planes flying by, like warning you, don't try it. Don't even do it, you know? So, and they've said to have found Egyptian type of archaeology there as well. So, I mean, nothing surprises me.
Yeah, man. It's once you realize that all of it's tied in and it's actually kind of what drives the world's elite towards what they're doing right now, it starts to make sense. And I'm trying to stop screen sharing, but I'm not exactly sure how to do it at the moment.
You just said that on the bottom.
Yeah. Problem is trying to pull up the Zoom.
It's a little red tag at the bottom there. Okay. See that picture right there where it says certain plants are associated with entering the presence of the serpent? Yes. That picture there to the left, 100% is like the images of DMT or ayahuasca. I mean, you do come across an entity. I mean, I look, folks, I mean, take it for what you want. You either for it or against it, whatever. I look at it as medicine, but I will say that it's almost identical to what you just showed right there.
It's amazing,
what,
man.
What picture is this? Or
this? So this was of, I was just looking through this slideshow. This is a broadcast I did about shamanism and Gilgamesh. And, this is the lineage of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, just according to the biblical resources and also historical resources. And so this kind of helps us understand the lineage and how these kingdoms got put together.
Is that an actual statue right there, or is that just
I don't think it's an actual statue. I think it's just an AI image, probably, to be honest with you, or some kind of somebody put it together. I just kind of found pretty that cool one together. But when you go back to do these families and kind of tying in how they propagate this religion, because there's certain ways that this religion has to be propagated. You see a migration pattern going from post-flood to Mesopotamian area. This is where you get the Anunnaki stories that are there in Mesopotamia. Then you see a migration of them to the Levant, where areas like Lebanon, Israel, Turkey, all of these areas where they kind of dominate the scene in these areas. And this is the area that ultimately Noah would
the Middle East, where all the conflict the
East,
is.
Yes, sir. Yeah, in the Middle East. And Nimrod, a lot of people don't know this, but the Hungarian people, they claim their lineage from Nimrod, and you can see it in their lineage. And this is where you get the Mongols. This is where you get people like Attila the Hun. This picture right here represents in Hungary, there's the Order of the Dragon. King Charles is the presiding member over the Order of the Dragon, and he is the direct heir of Dracula, you know, for instance. And so you have this continued thing. But one of the, what I wanted to tie in here is the common practice that a lot of these people have in their practices. And in the Ugaritic text, which is where you find most of the texts about the Rephaim, which is where you find, this is an area of Byblos and all of that, you have these stories that take place. And in this text, you have I'm trying to think on how to say this here. You have, I'm going to give a kind of definition of the Rephaim real quick first, because this will help you understand. But the Rephaim in the Ugaritic text, they have three different levels of them. The top being a lama, which means they live forever. And then there's like a second level and a third level. The second level being what we know as the shining ones. For example, Lucifer, his name in the Hebrew is Hallel bin Shahar. Hallel means shining one. Bin means son of, and then Shahar. So son of a star, son of something. He's not actually the devil himself. He's the son. He's a breeded being that is part God, part man in this text. And a lot of people don't want to see that for what it is, but it's pretty clear to me that this is the son of something. Why you include Bin in the name, in the Hebrew name, if it's not a son of Shahar? And if you look at up Shahar, you can find multiple things on that entity, but he is a shining one. And you see this with the Tuatha De Danann in the Irish text. You have these shining ones that are defending them in battle. And you have like I said before, you have the feathered serpent in this side of the world. You have the same kind of entities that, according to all legends, to Hyperborea.
Could there be any truth to a lot of the people that have come on my show and talked about this? But they say like these could these be alien gods? Could they be outer space alien gods? Could they be from different solar systems, different constellations, all trying to rule this planet? Could that be it? I mean, this is kind of where my mind's going with this.
Well, so the way that, of course, I believe that they are from a different area. The book of Jude says that they left their first estate, which means their home. They left their home and they came down to do this. And they made an oath, according to the book of Enoch, there on Mount Hermon, which is still there to this day. But there's a tablet, you know, look, if you get a chance to look it up, but the Mount Hermon tablet that they found that has something about an oath. And they took this oath, interestingly enough, where Mount Hermon resides, the place that they took this oath, that now the UN resides over this same area, which is super interesting, I guess you could say. But yeah, originally they came from their own place. They came from heaven and they came down here and they decided to do what they did. And there's a lot of reason that.
Well, so could we say, could we say an alien, and look, a lot of people are going to take this wrong, whatever. Just hear me out.
Yeah,
trying to figure this out. But could we say an alien type overlord or God came here and put humans on this earth, and then we've been, and then the angels that fell from heaven came from other planets or solar systems? I mean, if that's even if you believe in outer space, a lot of my viewers believe the earth is flat. There's a firmament. I think there's something
I
out there.
I believe that pretty much too.
Go ahead. You said what?
No, I was going to say, I believe that as well. I believe that there's a firmament. All ancient texts believe that. In order for me to believe otherwise, I'd have to go by the word of NASA or go by the word of some humanist text that I don't agree
with. That's also
anyway.
Pushing evolution and the whole right. thing and science. And yeah, I mean, so you really got to go back into these texts to figure this out, which you have done, which you do extensively.
Yeah, that's because I'm like you, man. I want to know the truth before I die. Like, I want to know what everything is. I want to understand. And of course, we all see through a glass darkly. Like, we're not looking, none of us are perfect vision here. We're getting, I think more and more is being revealed over time. That's why you see more and more people turning to the truth, like yourself and like me and like a lot, even famous people. There's a lot of famous people turning to the truth. And I think it's important to distinguish the two different paths, because I think that sometimes the church does a horrible job of doing the division.
The church has been taken over. I mean, there's an obvious evil here. And yes. I think people see that more than ever, especially these last 40 years. People are waking up in droves. Everyone sees the evil that exists on this planet, and they know. Deep down, we all know there's something going on here. We all, and a lot of people are being led back to Christ, back to the Bible, and really trying to find this out because, dude, it is so obvious. It's getting exposed at such a rapid rate. There's no denying it. There's no denying there's a spiritual war happening right now.
That's so true, man. And, you know, going back to kind of what I was saying about I guess the idea of this bloodline and what they worship, what they practice, this is a real common, and this is an easy one to decipher because most people don't do it openly. In the Ugaritic text, the God King, which is this version of this Messiah, was known as MLK, which is Moloch, which is what the Bible describes as Moloch. And they would offer their children through to this fire because they believed in this eternal serpent thing that they would reincarnate and be pushed back in. And a lot of times people believe that if you sacrifice, like I guess the entities believe that if you sacrifice, they're of the age of accountability, they're a perfect serpent or servant in the next life because they don't even know what happened in the first life. So they believe that, you know, you live through your life. And if you reincarnate, you remember your last life, but these kids that were allowed to pass through fire were reborn and they didn't understand this. So that's kind of
this,
part of
this
kind of
reminds me of the Aztecs.
Exactly. Yeah. Aztecs had the same practices and look, the elites of our country, the ritual cremation of care that they do over there. Like this stuff when you start to look at the undertone of this, it's super sketchy how deep this stuff goes and how many people are actually involved. And, you know, these lineages, they believe that every so many years a Messiah is birthed through their lineage. And you have this real clear division in the Bible when it happens. It happens that both Messiahs are born at the same time. You have Jesus of Nazareth, and then you have Caesar that are both born in the same exact time. Now, Caesar believed to be Hercules. He was believed to be the incarnation of God.
So Caesar was really looked at as like a demigod?
He was looked at as a demigod, worshipped. He had his idol in the temple. As soon as he found out that the Messiah was to be born because of the image in the stars, he sent out a decree to firstborn children of the Hebrews. When the Magi came to visit Herod, he told the Magi to come back and tell him where this king is. Everything they could do to put an end to that king's life, that Messiah's life, they did because it's an age-old battle. It goes back way, 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 way back to pre-flood, these two entities. That one is the actual servant of On or God, which I would call El Elyon in the Bible, the Most High God. This is what Melchizedek, the one who blessed the children of Abraham, he was Melik Zadik, means king of righteousness in Jerusalem. Before there was the Hebrew people, this was the king of that area, and they worshiped the true God. And so you have this clear division there. Now, Caesar would have been worshipped as the people. They would have been in the temple. He would have been a hero. He was actually huge. The word Caesarian section comes from the word Caesar. If you look that up, you'll see that I'm right, that the Caesarian section comes from him because he was so big that he had to be cut out from his mother's belly. And, of course, it's a common practice today, a lot of money grabbing and stuff because of it. But this was where the word Caesarian section come from. He was a hero. He was a giant. He was a big man, strong man. He was something to behold. And so people that worshiped that religion believed him to be God. And they did these crazy rituals. They called it Heros Gamos. It's like hero with an S on the end. And then Gamos, Gamos. And they would be this ritual where they would receive the seed of a god into a woman. And they would have these equinox rituals to do this. And the seed that would be born of that would be the one to be ruled. And so they had to be born on a certain time. Everything was done by the stars. And there had to be certain orders upheld. But sacrifice was very common. And I believe it's still common. I think this is where we get a lot of our lawmakers are heavily into this. I mean, Hollywood's heavily into this. This is
Hold on
the
one
main
second.
Religion.
Let me knock out this mid-roll, folks. Stay with us. Don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. Get your Canoladine, folks. If you suffer from any type of daily pain, I need you to listen to this message very carefully. What we know about the root cause of pain is changing forever. As we age, aches and pains are natural. and we are all searching for effective ways to relieve the pain without side effects and addiction. Let's be frank. We have all seen the horrors of the opiate crisis. You may even been affected personally. And that's where a pioneering medical scientist comes in, Clint Winters. I had him on the show, folks. You may have seen this world-renowned health expert featured in the national media as he unveiled a natural pain reliever that is taking the world by storm. Yes, I am talking about Canolidine, the 100% drug-free way to get full-body pain relief but without the dangerous pills, which I know something about, by the way. As you read this, Canolidine has become the go-to pain reliever for over 1 million Americans and hundreds of professional athletes, myself included. It is so powerful, it was even used extensively by UFC fighters, and those guys know a thing or two about managing pain. Now get this, Clint explains how Canolidine is the only compound on earth that optimizes your natural painkillers called endorphins at any age. I'm on this, folks, and it works beautifully. You got to get off everything else, though. When taken daily, your body will fire back to relieving pain like you were in your prime in just days. And let me tell you, I was skeptical, but it works. I've tried virtually everything, and I have not felt this great in years. It's like all my daily aches and pains just went away. My neck, my back, my joints, my muscles all feel great and renewed. Best of all, Canolidine does not make me feel the least bit groggy or drugged up. I feel great, alert, and focused to get the day started. And the best news is Canolidine has only been as no documented side effects after 14 years of extensive testing. Hear me when I say this. Canolidine is absolutely the future of pain relief. So if you're dealing with pain, make sure you click on the link below and check out Clint's amazingly informative report on 100% American-made Canolidine. The innovation is changing lives by providing safe and powerful relief at one-tenth the cost of pain pills. Go to Canolidine, or actually trikono.com/Nino. It's down there at the bottom, folks. Get started. All right, man. Sorry about that.
No problem, man. You got to do what you got to do.
You got to do what you got to do. So my thing is this, man. You know, in Peru, they dig up these elongated. Where did the elongated skulls fit into all this? Because they've been, you know, digging these up forever, along with giants. Are these all fallen angels? And the Star Child skull, okay? Now, many people don't know this, and there's this skull that's out there. I'm sure you're familiar with it, John.
Yeah.
I actually held that in my hands.
Did you really? Wow.
Yes, but by complete coincidence, I went to a masseuse here in El Paso, and they were like, oh, you're the boxer. You know, we want to give you a massage, this and that. We know you're all – and that was at the time when I was really into, like, aliens, and I was studying all that stuff, and I was always talking about it and stuff. And they go, you're really into this stuff, right? And I was like, yeah, you know, this and that. And then they looked at each other when I was in the house, and they said, should we show them our children? And I was like, okay, this is getting weird now. And I'm laying on a massage table while they're saying this. They're like, yeah, let's bring it out for him. Bring it out. Bring out the children. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what are you guys talking about? And I'm starting to get kind of creeped out. But
bring
I had a friend waiting
out.
For
yeah,
me.
Yeah, bring them all.
I thought some Pulp Fiction stuff was about to happen.
Yeah.
But then they bring out this huge plastic, huge, like, toolbox-looking thing. And they pull out these two skulls. One was a human skull, and then one was the Star Child skull. And I go, oh, my gosh, I've seen this before. You know, Andrew Lloyd Pye and all these great, you know, historians and scholars have talked about this stuff. And so I looked at it and I got to hold it. And boy, let me tell you, not human, not human at all.
So
I held that thing in my hand.
Children?
It was light. It was like paper light, but more durable than a human skull. But paper light had two different lobes on it, the whole thing. So I'm just wondering, was I holding a fallen angel? Was that what that was? I mean, what the hell was I holding in my hands? What are the elongated skulls? What, seriously, like it's been scarred in my memory forever.
I think genetic manipulation, you know, when you look at kind of the old stories, like if you look at the Book of Enoch, which is a really good record of this, I believe it is actually written by Enoch. You have these chimeric type animals because they sinned against beasts as well. So they genetically manipulated. I think there were many different kinds of children of these beings, and we can't rule out that there are good beings out there that aren't fallen angels, that are just actually angels. The Bible actually says that, you know, you might be entertaining an angel unaware, so we can't rule out that some of these stories of these entities that went to these different places weren't good people. We can't rule that out 100%, but we know that genetic manipulation is one of the reasons that God was very irritated with these fallen entities, and he literally destroyed almost everybody in the earth because of it, and chained these entities in the ground. And
well, would today that be called eugenics and transhumanism?
I would think so. I mean, that, look, I'm no judge. I just know that I wouldn't put my hand in it. Like, you know, after seeing what happened to Azazel or one of these fallen powers that it talks about in the Bible, that they were an eternal being. They're chained hand and foot for an eternity underneath the earth, right? Until not to be released until the end time. The book of Revelation talks about them coming out from under the Euphrates. There's four angels that, and then they rile up all the people to fight. And I, you know, we could be going through that right now,
you know,
but they have,
you know, what's crazy to me is I look at these pictures that you're showing, and like what I always thought was just mythical and fairy tale is real.
I think so, man. I really believe it is. If it's not real, then the humanist idea is real. There's no, like, to me, that every record of everything tells the same exact story. And for me to believe
the globe,
across the world, I'm not going to say globe, but I'm across the land. Let's put it that way.
I stand corrected.
I really believe that this is, and look, I just want to show you a couple more things. I'm just going to show you this because I think that it kind of helps understand what we're dealing with right now. So can you see my screen?
Yeah. Okay, the Gali. So
the Gali were the Gauls, where we get the Gallic people in history, and there's record of them in the history of the kings of Britain. This is a historical record written from the time of the first kings of Britain all the way through. There's certain parts that are fascinating read, because you get to a time period called the Dark Ages, where you have this king called King Arthur. So everything changes. You have this Merlin, you have these different characters, you have these wizards that come along, and the Gali were known as these tall wizards, and they had these ancient practices that are just disgusting. I won't even tell you all about them, but they are druids. This is where our druidism comes from. And believe it or not, this is what all of the kings of Britain, even up to this point, preside over the druid order. And so King Charles presides over this druidic order that passes down through here. And then you have, I already said that. And then you have this continued order of the dragon that kind of comes out through that. And this is the one I was talking about, how King Charles presides over that. And then you have the Wales coat of arms that has the two red dragons, but his coat of arms actually has all that stuff too. And I believe that, and I'm not just going to say I believe, for people that really want to research these bloodlines, I suggest Lawrence Gardner in his works. He was the director of antiquities for Scotland, and he was a genealogist for a lot of these royal families. And so he did a genealogy of what they believed their bloodline to be. I don't want to slander them or say anything evil against them. I'm not doing that. They admit to this themselves. These are their bloodlines. And
is
so
this where the Antichrist is supposed to come from?
I think that it's the messianic child. If what I'm saying is correct, through all of these different places, they have to come from this bloodline. And Lawrence Gardner did a really good job of summing up the bloodline. He actually has brackets that show all the way, boom, 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 all the way down. And they all funnel to King Charles' bloodline. Every single significant king who's ever existed in the world funnels here, which is why he is the actual king of Britain. And now I'm not saying King Charles is the Antichrist, but there is a person who would. Tim Cohen, he wrote a book.
I'm interviewing him tomorrow.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it. Tell him I said hello.
You want to jump on with us?
I mean, I would, dude. I enjoyed talking to him. Let me know what time. I can't be 100% about that because my son's birthday is tomorrow, but it just depends on the time. But I've talked with him a couple times, and man,
11 a.m.
He will like take this stuff, and he'll show you exactly what I'm talking about.
He believes King Charles is the Antichrist. He believes it fully, wholeheartedly.
Yeah, he believes it, and I believe it's possible. But I believe that if not, then his lineage will, you know, continue. But this, all of these bloodlines filter here 100%. Like I said, Lawrence Gardner, if you're looking for bloodlines, if you're looking for genealogies, the guy's got it recorded in all of his books, and he's got the Grail bloodlines. He's got the ring lord bloodlines. He's got all of those different things condensed down into like three different books. Dude's he's not a Christian. He was actually a 33rd degree Freemason, and like I said, director of Antiquities of Scotland. So he's going to be probably practicing all these things we're talked about, and he's dead now, so he's not doing it now. But this is the kind of guy you're learning from, just so you know. So not everything he says you can take as gold, but you see the continuation of all of this stuff as the British people come over to America.
Well, you there also you go. The Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent, appeared in Mexico.
That's right, and it's been there for. And you even have it up here. I was just at Cahokia Indian Mounds in St. Louis. And you have the feathered serpent there as well. So it's everywhere. And America was named after the feathered serpent. The etymology of the word America means land of the feathered serpent. It's real, real clear. And you have the Thunderbird symbolism all over the American tribes. And you all the countries that identify with this Anzu bird. There's probably more that I'm not aware of. But
is that why there's a bald eagle as our national symbol?
It was supposed to be a phoenix originally, but they decided to make it a bald eagle. But the eagle is plays a huge role in most of these countries, and because they all have an original ideology and bloodline, and the leaders of them. I'm not saying the people in the country, because the leaders is who we're talking about. The people of the country, most are mundane people that are not practicing these things. And the people that are leading their country are probably not even their nationality.
Well, hold on. If you look at the Mexican flag, what is it? An eagle with a snake in it. That would be the feathered serpent. That could also mean the feathered serpent, right? I mean, if it's the Mexican flag is that of a hawk or an eagle picking up a snake.
Even in the there's an old Mexican depiction of that same image, but it's a green eagle who's holding these snakes. Have you seen that one? It's a green, actual green eagle, which gives to that whole idea you're talking about. Another thing that for people who are interested in reading old texts like me, Second Esdras is Ezra in the Bible was First Ezra. This is Second Ezra. It's an apocalyptic text, but it talks about this eagle that presides over the world, and it has three different heads, and it talks about how all its feathers represent different countries, and they come and they go. They rule not all at the same time, but they rule over all of these kingdoms. And it talks about how one day it'll be put down. It'll be remembered no more and all of that. But this is another representation of this same exact thing. And it's, to me, I think that out of all the things that I've learned about all of this, there's a clear, to me, a division of good and evil in the two different practices. The evil that a lot of these people, they want to dress religious, they want to appear religious before men. But when you meet people and you kind of understand who they are, you start to see the fruits of who they are and what spirit drives them in this earth. And you would have the spirit of the earth who drives people. You see people driving themselves to death by overeating. You see people driving themselves to death with drugs, with sex, with all of these different things, because they've chose to follow the god of this world, which 2 Corinthians 4:4 talks about the god of this world blinding people, being Satan. And then you have the other side of it, the part of you that decides, you know what, I'm gonna have restraint. I'm not going to eat myself to death. I'm not going to do those drugs. I'm not going to hump everything that moves. And that's what sets us humans apart from dogs. You know, dogs won't hesitate to hump another dog. You know, they're going to go hump another dog. There's no commitment, none of that stuff. But as humans, we have this desire to do what's right, as some of us do. But there's some people that don't. There's some people that are pure evil. I've met them, pure evil. I've met a guy that his eyes turned black before, and I'm not kidding. And this is like, there are people out there who they don't care to kill kids. They don't care to take your kids away. And they don't care to make.
I saw a video of a guy that worked at a slaughterhouse, and I don't know if you've seen this video that's circulating around the internet, and some guy approaches him in New York, and the guy just has this crazy, wild smile and look in his eyes, and the guy goes, "What do you do for a living, man?" He goes, "I work at a slaughterhouse." He goes, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, I use the air gun, and I do this, this, and that." And he goes, "Well, what do you like about your job?" And he goes, "Well, what's your favorite part about your job?" And the guy's like, "I love watching the light leave a living creature. And I just, that was so evil to me, man.
That's so evil.
And he had a smile, like just sadistic, like crazy. And
demonic, man.
You know, the fact that I was living in this world of debauchery and sleeping with every woman and drinking and drug. I mean, I thought it was just a normal thing to do. And now that I've been sober and turned a corner, I'm like, I can't believe, I look back and think what I thought was innocent fun was just digging my hole deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah. And that's why people follow the God of this world. You see an upside down twisting going on throughout history. At first you have a civilization after Noah, and then you have this flipping up of the ruling of the different Messiah. And then you have, the Bible talks about in the New Testament, it talks about the disciples and the apostles flipping the world upside down, boom. And then for a long time, you have order. You have a lot of order. Maybe it's not perfect, but you have order that takes place. And we've seen that order, me and you, Nino. A lot of the younger people that may be listening, they haven't seen that order shift. They haven't seen this transfer, this flipping upside down of good being evil and evil being good. But we've seen it. We've seen it. I believe that it was starting to get more evil in my time. I mean, I grew up in the 80s and 90s. And like, so I was there, rebellion was taking place. It was even going on before that, but the complete flipping of good and evil had not taken place yet. People still had consciences. They still fighting for whatever, you know, just horrible stuff. And it's just, things have changed and shifted so much that there's another flipping that's taken place. And I believe that the Bible speaks of this time when the men of people will fall away. There will be a great falling away, and there will be, people will betray each other. There'll be evil people that just do evil things, lust after their own hearts. And it really represents, you know, society nowadays. You know, most kids are glued to their phone, and you know as well as I do. And, you know, when I was young, if you wanted, you had to go find a magazine, and you couldn't even go buy one because you weren't old enough. You had to go searching for that kind of stuff. It wasn't like you could just flip it up on your phone, boom, 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 every kind of man available. And these sexual sins actually go along with a certain demon known as Ashtaroth. And I believe it is Ashtaroth. That's one of the demons who is associated with sex. And one of
Baphomet as well, right?
Yeah, Baphomet's huge. Like the pan Baphomet, the goat yeah. Human guy. Yeah, big time. Like that's a major feature of that. So when you see that start twisting, and you're going to see it real bad coming in the future.
I just saw, and we got to be careful to talk about this on YouTube, but I just saw a bearded lady giving birth, and I just thought, wow, we're there now.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that, obviously, you know, what I'm getting at, it was a woman that was, you know, and it was very, very, very disturbing.
Yeah. But and this is what that's we're going to see, man. That's where we're at now. And this is why the light shining is going to be such a powerful thing, because the darker it gets, the brighter the light that we have shines forth in these people. I mean, most people, you walk around, you see a dead stare, and they're just looking for some glimmer of hope from their 9-to-5, from their everyday grind of going there and doing this. And they're just looking for that. They're just so blind that the light just seeps in. And so I encourage all of, you know, every single one of us to realize that we do have this light that shines forth. I mean, everywhere I try to go, I try to make sure that people know that there is love out there. There is truth out there. There is something that they can grab onto that's different from the world. Because like you, Nino, I indulged in everything that I could indulge in. And I realized that there's nothing there. There's nothing there.
The void.
And it's just death and destruction, man. I saw it happen to my friends. I saw it happen to so many people, just death and destruction.
The crazy thing with me is that I saw it happen this last couple of years, really the last year. I've lost 4 friends that were all into the same lifestyle I was. And I was considered the crazy one to these guys. They would always say, man, Rodriguez is crazy, man. That guy, this, that guy, that, man. And then they're gone.
Yeah.
Like, man, I barely missed that. Like, I got through like by the skin of my teeth, dude. Yeah. And here I am, like, it's a miracle I'm even here, dude. So I and the fact that the hindsight's 2020, man, when you look back, it's like, wait, what? I feel like I'm on this elevated mountain or just a plane where I'm looking down and I'm like, oh boy, that was not good. What was I doing? Like, why even boxing, the whole thing was just service to self. And Dude, I just feel like I was drowning in a blackness, an ocean of blackness, and I just got somehow or another just a net scooped me up, dude. And obviously,
hey, man.
Jesus That's Christ, awesome. You know, 100%. You know, when
That's
I gave
amazing,
up my drinking,
man.
he started working in my life. So I tell
amazing.
everybody, you know, start using, give up something, you know, take the leap of faith and the net will appear. Right.
I agree, man.
Get in the fight.
That's an awesome story, Nino. I love that, man, because like people think that they're going to get to a certain thing. It's going to make them happy. They think, oh, if I attain like you, like if I'm the champion, I'll be happy. Or if I get this amount of money, I'll be happy. If I get this, but this, it's never
they
there.
Think it's a destination. They think it's a destination when life is truly a journey of, and that, you know, sometimes it's, you know, for me, I was a slave to my impulses and serotonin dumps and like adulation and adrenaline. Like that's all that I lived off. I lived off that drug, you know, and if I wasn't fighting, I was drinking and partying and doing drugs to keep that high going.
Yeah.
Truth is, if you can sleep at night and you have peace, that's happiness for
That's
me
what
now.
everybody's shooting for. That's why they're trying to get more money. That's why they're trying to get better at fighting. That's why they're trying to do all these things, because they're shooting for that. So if you can be that before you get rich or before you do any of those things, then it just makes it that much more enjoyable. But man, not trying to attain that to be happy, boom, impossible. And there's nobody. I think, Nino, your story proves it, but there's other people that can tell you the same thing. Like there's people that are billionaires that are the most unhappy people that'll ever exist, you know, millionaires that are most unhappy people that'll ever exist.
I just saw there's a guy that came in and did some work on my pool, and he has tattoos all over his face. I mean, really bad stuff, like MS-13 stuff, right? Wow. I start talking to him, and I'm like, hey, man, I go, I know it's hot outside. I go, you could smoke or drink, whatever you do. He's like, no, I don't drink, and I don't smoke. And I was like, and I start talking to him. He turned his life around. He's a Christian. He's been sober 7 years. And I was just like, wow. Oh, wow, man. Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah, and you could tell this guy was like hardcore. Like,
that's cool.
man,
Yeah.
He had every tat on his face. Like, damn, a roadmap, dude. Like,
yeah,
of everything,
prison.
You know. Yeah, and
yeah.
I think he escaped, right, somewhere down in South America somewhere. But he's like, no, I'm a Christian, and I've been sober 7 years, and I have kids, and I'm living a good life. I'm like, wow,
that's
man,
awesome, man.
Dude. If that guy can change, I'm telling you,
we all
can
love
change.
Those stories.
Yeah,
I love those.
It's
That's why
incredible.
You started doing what you're doing. That's why I started doing what I'm doing, because we want people to experience what we've experienced. There's nothing like it. I mean, to be
And
able
it
to be
doesn't matter
forgiven.
how deep and dark of a place you're at, you can always get out.
That's right.
Just the mere fact of just being able to look up and look, ask for God. That's all you need.
Yeah.
That is in defiance of Satan. Just if you have nothing, no energy left in your body, just the mere fact of looking up to God. That's all you got to do. And the God takes it from there.
That's right. That's right, man. So, yeah. And I appreciate, you know, sharing that. All as always, you know, there's a lot of people that are really kind of scared to share that part of their life, but man, that's what makes us, you know. A lot of people will even deny it after it happens, you know, their life will get flipped over. But like to be able to feel that, like, I can't think of any better gift that any human can ever receive, because that's really, to me, that's true happiness, that's true peace. And even when turmoil is going on, the ability to be able to realize that you are bigger than this, you're greater than the one who's in the world, because you're this communion with God now. You have the one who created everything, the one that can take the life out of somebody's hands just like that, you know, and you have that behind you. It's a different feeling than going through life alone, thinking that you could have to act on your impulses and just run around like an animalistic person. That's not the way we have to be. Nobody wants that. I don't know how many times, Nino, probably you would the next day be like, man, why am I doing this? Like, I just want to stop. This is sucks, man. Like, what is going on here? And then, but you'd be right back into it. Boom.
Everybody. Yeah, my dad can't believe it. My dad's like, I can't believe what you've done with your life.
That's awesome.
He goes, I never saw this coming. He goes, I thought you were done, like my daughter, because my sister died of alcoholism. Yeah. So my dad thought I was next, you know. And the fact
that's awesome.
I pulled this 180 out of my ass and did this, it was all through God, obviously. But is even my friends, they can't believe it. They're not stopping. They're still going. But they look at me and they look at me like I'm an alien. Like,
Yeah.
I don't have any friends anymore, to be honest with you. I don't really. I have some friends, some new friends I've met through this industry that we're doing podcasting. I don't have friends anymore. I don't. I have no desire to go to the bar and sit there and just look. It's over, dude. I've just moved on. You know,
if you have a purpose in life, it's hard to do all those things anyway. You know, you're busy. You have a purpose. You're trying to do something, and a multitude of friends all to me. And I'm the same way as you, man. Like you could have told the same as I could, whatever you just said, that's me too. But, I don't have a multitude of friends either. Cause that's just a multitude of drama, a multitude of time you got to spend here or there.
Less people, less problems.
That's for sure, man. And ultimately when I first became a believer, I was alone in the walk, you know, like I didn't know, I had to be alone. I had to like figure out what was going on. I had to like, my wife was like, what is going on with you? Like, you know, you get out of jail and all of a sudden you've got this, you're all about the Bible now. Like you're reading, you know, like all this stuff. And, my friends that, you know, I knew my whole life were still doing drugs. And of course, every time I talked to them, I'd be talking to them about what happened and none of them could really understand. No. They thought I was just trying to beat a case or something, but it was like, it was real to me. And it was something that like, that just transformed my heart instantly. It was amazing. Like, yeah, there's all kinds of other things that I had to like shuck off over time. Like I had a lot of issues through life. You know, you go through things at a certain age, you're going to go through a lot of crap and that a lot of crap's going to destroy your mind in different ways. And so I was always, you know, God's always renewing my mind. He still is to this day. I mean, I'm 40, almost 42 years old and God's still renewing my mind. And we're talking back 2010. So like that's a lot of time to renew somebody's mind, but it's really taken that long for me. But that peace is still there. The knowing that God's there and knowing that my situations are laid out for me, whether I know it or not, I always have my plans, but you just like, you can probably say the same thing. You think you got plans, but ultimately your plans are laid out by the Father.
You know, I used to look at people that changed their life and went to God or got married and had kids or do. And I used to be like, oh gosh, they just can't hold up, man. They can't keep it going. They're losers. And after everything that happened to me in my life, it's like my karma tab was like in my 30s, probably around 33, 34, 35. I was like, that's when the karma tab gets. It's like, oh, by the way, here's your bill, sir. It's like my karma tab. And I was like, oh, whoa, this is what I owe, you know, for all the fun, man, I was having. And then that's it. Then a period of darkness happened in my life from like 32, 31 years old, really, to 42. And then it changed. So. Man, I just want to say, John, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate you, brother. It's been so, so revealing and awesome. Thank you for sharing your testimony as well. So I'm sure my audience really appreciates it. Where can people find you?
You can find me on just type in NYSTV or Now You See TV on YouTube, and you can find us there. You can find links to all the different social media stuff if you want to. I don't do a ton of social media, but every now and then I'll post something on there. But you know, my goal is not to really gain followers by doing this, but ultimately the goal for me is, I don't care if you ever listen to me again, if you go and you pick up your Bible or you reach out to God and you transform your life, that's really all I care about. So I appreciate the opportunity, and, you know, I'm always grateful for the opportunity to just share what the path that I've been on. And to hear yours is a blessing to me as well, man. I like to hear stuff like that, people that really, truly realize and understand. So I'm thankful your audience has been great, man. I've never received any horrible comments from anybody in your audience that I know of. I don't really read horrible comments. I usually just, you know, flick them.
I've stopped reading my comments. Every now and then when I come across a battle and I just block them or send them packing, but I don't even read them anymore. You can't. Either. You just can't. There's just so much out there. So much negativity. You can't fight the world, man. And that's another lesson I'm learning, because I used to be like, reactive. And now actually the trolls have made me diffused me, because there's just so many of them that I'm like, all right, well, I can't fight everybody. But John,
can't win.
Can't. Thank you so much, man. Yeah. I'll have this up very soon on YouTube.
Sounds good, bro. Appreciate it.
All right.